Shabbat Shalom.
I want to start with a teaching that was sent to me by one of my teachers, Dr. Walter Hertzberg, who was the scholar in residence this past November here at Bethel. The teaching that he sent me this week is from the Kli Yakar, and it is based upon verses that we read not only in this week's Torah portion, but also that describe the counting of the Omer. We read, Usfartem lachem mimacharat ha-shabbat miyom ha-viyachem et Omer ha-tunufa sheba shabbatot miyotiyena. You should count for yourselves from the morrow after the day of rest, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the waving, 7 weeks shall it be complete. Ad mimacharat ha-shabbat ha-shvi'it tisperu chamishim yom. Until the day after the seventh Shabbat, that's 50 days, count 50 days. And then at the end of it, it says, V'hi kravtem mincha chadasha la'adonai. You should bring a new mincha offering to Adonai. And we're supposed to do that on what holiday? What holiday do we celebrate 49 days? Shavuot, right? On the 50th day is the holiday of Shavuot. We bring forth, and the Torah says we bring forth a new mincha offering. Now, on Shavuot, we also celebrate what? Not just the Omer, but we celebrate the giving of the Torah. That's right. And part of what the Kli Yakar is going to respond to is the fact that the giving of the Torah is actually not associated with the holiday of Shavuot in the Torah itself. Right, the holiday of Shavuot is only a harvest festival, and it's only later, most scholars say that it was only after the destruction of the Second Temple that the holiday of Shavuot gets associated with the giving of Torah, and there's a creation of three different time periods, the past of Yitziat Mitzrayim, the present, the giving of the Torah, and the future, the world to come that is associated with the other pilgrimage festival of Sukkot. But, so it's only later, and the Kli Yakar wants to understand, why doesn't the Torah tell us explicitly about the giving of the Torah associated with the holiday of Shavuot? And he says as follows. He says, Siman liyom matan Torah, it's this idea of a new mincha offering is a sign of the giving of the Torah. Ki ha-Torah tzricha liyot chadasha etzel ha-adam b'chol yom. Because the Torah needs to be new for a person each and every day. In other words, when we experience the Torah, we don't read it as a history book. We don't say, oh, we read that Torah portion last year. We are constantly experiencing the Torah in a new way because we have changed, and because we have changed, our understanding of Torah has changed. And that's why we bring a new mincha offering on Shavuot to remind us of the newness with which we should experience the Torah. He says, "Ki'ilu hayom kibla mehar Sinai," as if today we receive the Torah at Har Sinai. And he says, "She'al matan Torah." Now, why doesn't the Torah tell us explicitly that this is what's going on? She'al matan Torah lo ratza Hashem lahagbil yom yadua. The Torah didn't want to fix a particular day and a known day for the giving of the Torah, because it didn't want to, God did not want to lehagbil. Lehagbil is to draw a boundary, a gvul, to say that there's one day when we got the Torah, and one day that we study Torah, and one day that we receive the Torah, and therefore, since we do it on that day, we don't do it any other days. Because, of course, we experience and we receive the Torah every day, שצריך האדם יהיה דומה לו בכל יום ביום מכל ימות השנה כאילו יום שקיבל בהר סיני. The Torah should be new to us every day and not just on one day. And I mention this, A, because it's in the Torah reading, but also, as I said before, when Esther came up for the Aliyah, we find ourselves between days of memory in Israel. We are between Yom HaShoah, in which we remember the Shoah, and Yom HaZikaron, and Yom HaAtzma'ut, and we could ask the question, do we really need a day to remember the Shoah, because don't we remember the Shoah and what took place each and every day? And there's a danger in fixing a day because it may give us permission to forget at other times. But we have a day because it is important to set aside time for memory. I'll share with you that when I was a fellow at the Mandel Institute, it was an interesting phenomenon I spoke about with some of the Israeli fellows. You know, people say that it's hard to go a day in Israel, or even an hour in a conversation, without the topic of the Shoah coming up and being mentioned. Because the Shoah has become for us the touchstone, the way in which we express what is ultimately evil. And as we think about moral issues, the Shoah constantly comes up in conversations, and there's a danger of that, of speaking about what is unspeakable too much. Elie Wiesel tells the story that when he goes and visits the camps, as he has done a few times in the years since the war, that after the experience of going back to the camps, he will try to stay in silence for 2 or 3 days to give respect to the experience that he has just had and to remind himself that there are no answers, and that in some ways the only response to the Shoah is one of silence, because silence speaks to the ultimacy of what took place. And yet, he wrote elsewhere, and he writes, of course, a lot about the Shoah, that we need to speak about it, we need to learn about it, because when we do, it can help the dead to vanquish death by transforming our behavior because of that memory and making us different, and in doing so, giving life to those who have already perished. I bring this up because it's been a strange week. It's been a week in which the Shoah has been mentioned in a strange place. And I'm speaking about the conversation now heard around the world because it was recorded and put on the internet between Donald Sterling, who I want you to know, his name was Donald Tokowitz. He's a Jew. The owner of the LA Clippers, and his mistress, V. Stiviano. And I hesitate to read to you any of this conversation in the presence of the Torah or from the Bima. I'm not on the Bima right now, but in the vicinity of it. And yet, I'm going to do so for educational purposes because I want you to hear what was said, and also how the Shoah came into this conversation. Donald Sterling said, I quote, "The white Jews, there's white Jews and black Jews, do you understand?" Stiviano said, "And are the black Jews less than the white Jews?" And Sterling said, 100%, 50, 100%. "And is that right?" she asked. "It isn't a question," he said. "We don't evaluate what's right and wrong. We live in a society. We live in a culture. We have to live within that culture." Stiviano said, "But shouldn't we take a stand for what's wrong and be the change and the difference?" "I don't want to change the culture," said Sterling, "because I can't. It's too big." Later in the recording, Stiviano says to him, "It's like saying, let's just persecute and kill all of the Jews." And Sterling says, "Oh, it's the same thing, right?" And Stiviano says, "Isn't it wrong? Wasn't it wrong then with the Holocaust? And you're Jewish. You understand discrimination." And Sterling can only say to her, "You're a mental case. You're a mental case." Stiviano may not be on anyone's list of five moral philosophers from whom we learn ethics in the world, but she was right, and he's wrong. And it's fascinating that it is she who learns the lessons of the Shoah and he who misunderstands them. The Columbia professor and New York Times columnist Samuel Friedman wrote in the foreword earlier this week, "To read this exchange is to be confronted by some bizarre amalgam of a 1930s screwball comedy and a Sidney Lumet moral drama. In this real-life version, It takes a gold digger scorn to teach a billionaire mogul the lesson of his own history. And in doing so, Stiviano has helped frame the Sterling scandal in Jewish terms. Compare Sterling's words, who was born in 1933, to the words of Elie Wiesel, who was born 5 years before and an ocean away. Wiesel took a walk with Oprah Winfrey a few years ago as they walked on the tracks of Auschwitz. And Wiesel said to her, "I've gone everywhere, trying to stop so many atrocities, Bosnia, Kosovo, Macedonia. The least I can do is show the victims that they are not alone. When I went to Cambodia, journalists asked me, 'What are you doing here? This is not a Jewish tragedy.' I answered, 'When I needed people to come, they didn't. That's why I'm here. Suffering gives no privilege. I don't think I should accept other people's sufferings because I suffered. Just the opposite. Because I suffered, I don't want others to suffer.'" As Jews, we have a responsibility to remember and to remind the world of the particularity of the Shoah, that Jews were singled out uniquely as Jews for mass extermination. But the particularity of that experience should point us outward and not return us to ourselves. It should not become an excuse for our harboring hatred and bigotry because it was done to us, but it should rather give ourselves the impetus, a recommitment, that we can change the world and that we have a duty, that our suffering propels us forward. I think it is perhaps the quintessential Jewish idea that we are a particular people, that we are a different people, and yet the purpose of our difference, the purpose of our particularity is to be, as Isaiah says, an or lagoyim, a light unto the nations. It is to move us to remind ourselves, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, that Adonai, who is our God, is not only our God, but Adonai is one, that God is the God for all, and that what is just for us is just for others. There's a second part of the story. Howard Migdal is a sports reporter, and he was at the news conference that was given by Adam Silver, who I learned downstairs is a Duke alumnus, and is the newly appointed NBA commissioner and a Jew. And if you didn't hear, Silver handed down the maximum penalty. He kicked Sterling out of the league for life, and he fined him $2.5 million. And he gave a long press conference earlier this week in which he was asked a question by a Jewish reporter named Howard Migdal. And I want to read you the transcript of the press conference. Migdal said to him, quote, "I'm curious. You spoke about your personal response to this. In terms of Donald Sterling self-identifying as Jewish and you doing the same as well, I'm wondering whether there was a specific kind of pain associated with that for you, and if you felt a certain responsibility within the Jewish community to be responding in this way." And Silver responded as follows, "I think my response was as a human being." He went on to say, "I would say about the entire situation, I think this is regardless of anyone's religion, ethnicity, nationality, I think it is incredibly hurtful." And his response, Migdal liked his response. Okay? And I think many of us can feel a sense of pride at that response as well. Migdal wrote later on, "Silver took to the podium on Tuesday with an opportunity to speak as a Jew against bigotry and intolerance, to bring forth a moral outrage on par with how so much of America is responding to Donald Sterling's view of the world, Silver delivered an answer to every person who would use Donald Sterling as a means to question how the Jewish people feel about race. On Tuesday, Adam Silver spoke for us. Adam Silver spoke for me. Don't get me wrong. I am incredibly grateful for the stand which Silver took, and there is a piece of his response with which I agree completely and that I am proud of, because Sterling was, as the phrase goes, a shan de la goyim. It was a public embarrassment for the Jewish people, and to have a Jew be the one who stands up and publicly takes such a stand is an incredibly important moment, as Magdal described. And yet, I'm going to be honest with you, I wish he had said something more. I love the fact that he said that I'm responding as a human being, but that's not the question he was asked. He was asked by a fellow Jew, are you responding as a Jew? And essentially the answer that he gave was no. I'm responding as a human being. And I wanted him to say, I'm responding as a human being and I'm responding as a Jew. And there are two reasons that I can think of. I'm sure there are more. And I want to say that I don't know if I could have done a better job on a nationally televised press conference. This is not a personal critique of him. But there are two reasons that I can think of why it is that in that moment he doesn't say, I'm responding as a human being and as a Jew. And neither one of them are good. The first one is that the Jewish education that he received, and from what I understand, I spoke with Joel Fleischman, and he had not an easy background, right? But the Jewish education that he received was either one about rituals and holidays done in a foreign language that made no impact whatsoever on him in deciding such an incredibly important moral case, which is how do I respond in the national spotlight to ugly and vicious racism? And if the Judaism that we are teaching and that we are passing on is so irrelevant to someone making such an important decision in that moment, then it's worthless. What are we doing if we are passing on to people traditions that don't make an impact in the most important moral moments in our lives in a national spotlight? And the other possibility, perhaps in some ways just as disturbing, is that in a society, an America, where the metaphor has changed from being a melting pot in which one forgets one's identity to the salad bowl in which we share a common destiny, but one comes into that common destiny with a sense of one's ethnic identity and religious identity, that we stand as African Americans and as Mexican Americans and as Irish Americans and as Italian Americans and Native Americans, that the one person who can't stand in that salad bowl as a proud ethnic minority is a Jew. That somehow we can't stand and say, I answer you both as a human being and as a Jew. That the culture has created a stigma that makes it impossible for us to say so, or that we are not comfortable enough in our own identity, that we are willing to say, I am standing in American society in a moral moment, and I do so both as an American and as a human being, and because my heritage, my history, informs who I am. And if we forget our identity and we leave it behind, we cannot be an Or LaGoyim. We cannot be a people who has an important message to the world if we are so unwilling to keep our distinctiveness and to speak as a people who we are in a society where everyone else is willing to do so. Which brings me to Social Action Shabbat. And I speak about this, A, because Jackie Resnick said you should speak about social action Shabbat, and she's kind of like Gladys, like the mob. You don't say no. She asked me to do it, so I'm doing it. But it works perfectly. Because when we think about social action, there is one metaphor which comes to mind. It was given to me, to all of us, by Cynthia Ozick, who is an American Jewish author, who said that when we think about Jewish identity, the model for how it is that we redeem the world, the image is the shofar. The shofar proclaims redemption. It proclaims freedom. And Ozick said, the shofar, you can't get noise out of the shofar if you blow from the big end first. You have to start from the narrow end. You have to start from somewhere. The people who have brought a great moral vision to the world have not, by and large, been humanists. Martin Luther King was not an everyman's human being. He was a Christian. He was a devoted and passionate Christian. The Pope is a devoted and passionate Catholic. Gandhi was particular, and Heschel spoke and marched in Alabama as a rabbi. We should have deep roots. And by having deep roots, we can bring goodness and light to the world. When we do social action, we should have a sense of what Wiesel said, that because I suffered, I don't want others to suffer. That when we work at a soup kitchen, or when we donate food, or when we fight poverty, we do all these things as human beings and as Jews. And we should be proud of that. And people should know. And if the community in which we are doing that responds to us as Jews in a negative way, that should be of concern. We should be able to stand opposite others and to be in relationship with them without letting go of ourselves. My prayer for us is that we dig deep roots. That when our people succeed as they will, and by the way, we fail spectacularly. When Jews fail, the world knows about it. Bernie Madoff, everybody associates, is a Jew associated with the worst kind of greed and thievery. And Adam Silver did something great, but Donald Sterling failed spectacularly as a Jew. And we should succeed as Jews as well. And to do that, we have to have deep roots. We have to pass on to our children something of what it means to be a Jew in that moral moment. And we have to give our children and ourselves the pride to stand in those moments as who we are, and in doing so, to bring an important message to the world and more light and more justice. For that is why we are here. Shabbat Shalom.